Good morning, everyone, and welcome to today's Alpek third quarter 2013 results conference. With us this morning from Alpek, we have Jose Valdez, CEO, Eduardo Escalante, CFO, and Hernan Lozano, Head of Investor Relations, who will discuss the company's performance and answer any questions that you might have. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded and will be available on the company's website, www.alpek.com. I will now turn the call over to Mr. Lozano. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, and welcome to our third quarter 2013 earnings conference call. We very much appreciate everyone's participation today. This call will be divided into two parts. First, Mr. Valdez, our CEO, and Mr. Escalante, CFO, will provide some insights about the industry and our company's results. And after that, we will open up for a Q&A session. Information discussed on today's call may include forward-looking statements regarding the company's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risks and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to place undue reliance on these forward-looking statements. Alpek undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. I will now turn the call over to Mr. Jose Valdez.
Thank you, Renan. Good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining us. I will start today's call with a brief overview of our company's performance and recent progress in the implementation of our strategic projects. Afterwards, Eduardo Escalante will discuss our company's financial results and comment on guidance. Let me begin by introducing Eduardo. As announced, starting in September, he was appointed to the CFO of Alpek to replace Raul Millares, who is now heading Alfa's energy division. Eduardo has a long tenure with Alfa, having first joined the company in 1981, where he held various positions at Ilsamex, Sigma, Alfa Corporate, and others. In 2007, he joined Alpek, where his most recent position was president of the caprolactam and fertilizer business. I'm delighted to welcome Eduardo in his new role and to his first earnings call at Alpek. Moving on to industry dynamics, the recovery in some of our markets and products has been slower than anticipated this quarter. And while EBITDA increased quarter on quarter, results were below our guidance as our expectations of a stronger recovery towards the end of the year in caprolactam and polyester export markets did not fully materialize. As many of you know, the Asian polyester market has been struggling with low margins following a significant increase in capacity during 2012. We began to see a recovery earlier this year, but margins shifted unexpectedly towards the end of the third quarter, increasing pressure on global polyester markets, particularly outside of North America. We believe that this shift in the third quarter, that started actually in July and August, and was very pronounced in September, is a result of people or polyester producers anticipating a decrease in raw material prices. As a result of that, a lot of people are managing their inventory, trying to reduce inventory, and by doing that, reducing margins. The margins, as I mentioned, in September and the first 17 days in October were below $200 per ton of combined margin of PTA and PET, which is very unusual given that the cash cost of producing PET and PTA integrated is $235 per ton. So they were clearly selling below cash cost. And as we expected, fortunately, last Friday, the price of paraxylene reduced significantly, and the margins of PTA and PET have improved somewhat. Today, the margins are north of $200, $210 approximately, and we estimate that most likely the margins will start to recover gradually from here until the end of the year around these levels or hopefully gradually increasing to 220, which is what we saw at the beginning of this year. In terms of the caprolactam, the global caprolactam industry is also facing a difficult situation with margins at near historically low levels since late 2012. This is a result of new capacity in China. Within this environment, we're focused on leveraging the variables under our control to further enhance our cost structure. As planned, all operations ceased at our Kefir facility on September 30th, and the consolidation of our polyester plant is underway. As a reminder, these actions will allow APEC to realize an annual cost savings of approximately $30 million. Moreover, we recently signed a technology license agreement with DSM, a leading supplier of technology in caprolactam, that will enable us to improve our caprolactam cost competitiveness by reducing feedstock consumption and maximizing the efficiency of certain production processes. Also, our facility in Salamanca is already one of the lowest cost plants in the world. We expect that this initiative will result in annual cost savings of approximately $9 million starting on the second half of 2014. In addition, we are evaluating several other projects that offer attractive cost reduction possibilities to continue to strengthen our competitiveness in the short term. As we are managing through near-term challenges, we are also selectively pursuing new investment opportunities to support future growth and improve the longer-term profitability of our business. An example of this is the recently announced JV agreement with United Petrochemical Company, wholly owned subsidiary of Sistema, for the potential construction of an integrated PTA-PET plant in Russia. The partnership combines our unique Integrex technology and expertise in the polyester value chain together with United Petrochemicals Company local market knowledge and domestic paraxylene sourcing capabilities. We are excited by the prospect of this opportunity, which represents APEC's first venture outside of the Americas and demonstrates the great potential of our Integrex technology as an effective vehicle for international expansion. Fast-growing PET demand and an advantage in raw material costs make Russia a very attractive market for us. The JV is still in the early stages. We're currently focused on evaluating the feasibility of this plan, which will require $10 million investment by each partner. Construction will be subject to approval of the business plan by the board of directors of ALPEC and UPC. The project has been granted on conditional approval by the European Commission and is subject to approval from other relevant competition authorities. We are also moving ahead on other strategic projects. The construction of our Kosolekake cogeneration plant is now more than 90% complete, and we remain on track to begin operations by the end of the first quarter 2014. As we have mentioned previously, the market response to our power offering has been very positive, as we currently have 100% of the plant electricity either contracted or committed with other industrial users for a period of approximately, in average, 15 years. Regarding the integrated PTA-PET site in Corpus, progress is in line with the original plan. We also remain on track with the implementation of other strategic projects that have yet to reach investment stage. The technical specification phase at the Altamira cogeneration plant is underway, and we remain on track to begin construction shortly after the Kosolekake plant comes online. We are also encouraged as we continue engaging potential partners for our glycol backward integration project and expect to be providing an update as soon as new information becomes available. At this point, I would like to turn the call over to Eduardo, who will discuss our company's financial results and comment on guidance.
Thank you, Pepe, and good morning, everyone. I'm delighted to be participating on this conference call and look forward to maintaining a close relationship with the financial community. Before moving on to our financial results, I would like to note that most of my comments will focus on variations from the previous quarter. We believe that quarter-on-quarter insights are more relevant than annual comparisons to illustrate recent market trends, given the current industry dynamics. Please keep this in mind as we review our company's results. On that basis, consolidated net sales were down 2% quarter-on-quarter, reflecting declines of 1% in polyester and 4% in plastics and chemicals. Volume was flat in both businesses, while average dollar prices decreased from second quarter levels, driven by lower oil and petrochemical feedstock prices. Consolidated EBITDA for the quarter was $158 million, up 29% when compared to the second quarter. Excluding a one-time $27 million expense provision in the second quarter related to the closure of the K-Fuel site, EBITDA would have increased by 6%. Although third quarter EBITDA was higher than the previous quarter, the result was 10% below our original estimate. As Pepe mentioned earlier, our expectations for a stronger recovery during the second half of the year did not fully materialize. Let me now go over the performance of our two business segments. Polyester volumes were flat from second quarter levels, despite the closure of the K-Fuel facility and two major hurricanes affecting Mexico during the third quarter. However, third quarter revenues decreased 1% quarter-on-quarter due to lower prices. Year-on-year polyester volumes declined 8% in the third quarter due to a combination of less favorable export market and the effect of the K-Fuel shutdown. Polyester EBITDA was $113 million this quarter, up 56% when compared to the previous quarter. Excluding the one-time $27 million K-Fuel expense provision in the second quarter, polyester EBITDA increased 14% on a quarter-on-quarter basis. This improvement, however, fell short of expectations as we had anticipated more favorable market dynamics, particularly outside of North America. Moving on to plastics and chemicals, net sales were down 4% quarter-over-quarter as a result of lower average prices. Volume was flat quarter-on-quarter, following the 13% increase posted in the second quarter. Price volatility affected polypropylene demand towards the end of the quarter, offsetting the 14% EPS volume growth driven by incremental exports to the U.S. and Canada, as well as the start of the electronics and appliances packaging season in Mexico. EBITDA for this segment was $44 million, down 9% quarter-on-quarter, resulting mainly from weaker polypropylene volume and lower margins to propylene. Although third quarter plastics and chemicals EBITDA decreased when compared to the second quarter, this segment's year-to-date EBITDA, excluding caprolactam, has exceeded original estimates, driven by stronger margins in both EPS and polypropylene. Before moving on to Q&A, I would like to wrap up this section of the call with a brief review of dividends, CapEx, net debt, and 2013 guidance. This quarter, we completed a second dividend payment of $0.022 per share, bringing total dividend payments for the year to $114 million. In terms of CapEx, we invested $30 million this quarter for a total of $156 million year-to-date. Approximately 80% of the funds have been applied to strategic projects, including the Cosoleacaque Cogeneration Plant and the Greenfield PTA PET site in Corpus Christi. An important event this quarter on the financing front was the issuance of $300 million in 10-year senior notes. This marked the completion of a comprehensive debt refinancing initiative, which has allowed us to extend average maturities to 8.4 years. As a result, total debt amortization from now until 2021 are $141 million. This amount represents one-third of Alpek's cash balance at the end of the third quarter. Finally, in terms of guidance, we expect fourth quarter EBITDA of $135 million, reflecting end-of-year seasonality and lower than anticipated margins in caprolactam and polyester export markets. Full-year EBITDA would total $575 million, compared with our previous estimate of $623 million. It is important to note that more than half of the $48 million difference in annual EBITDA is being driven by caprolactam. This concludes my remarks, and now I would like to open the call for questions. Operator, please do so.
Hello, operator. Could you please instruct the participants on how to place their questions?
Thank you. To the audience, if you have a question or comment today, please press star then one on your touchtone phone. To those of you joining us today using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute button is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, to the audience, it is star then one if you have a question or comment today. We'll go first to Santiago Perez-Tofer of Credit Suisse.
Hi, good morning, Pepe, Eduardo, and Hernan, and thanks so much for your time. I have two questions, if I may. The first one, I wanted to see if you could give us your view on the TPA pricing formula in North America. As given current conditions in the global industry, especially in Asia, we are a little bit concerned that we could see a downward adjustment next year. And also, if you could give us an, if there's any update on your project with Pemex, if there's anything that changed with the proposal of the energy reform. Thanks.
Okay, well, first, on your first question about PTA formula, we have no indications that would lead us to believe that there's going to be a change. Again, most of these difficult of margins in Asia has been impacting our export business, and so far domestic volume has been reasonably within the expectations. Of course, the decision to change its formula is depends very much on BP, so they will have to make that announcement if necessary. Normally or traditionally, if you want to use this as a reference, they would announce this beginning of October when there's going to be a change. So the fact that we haven't heard anything, I would say, is reasonably good news. Okay? And with respect to your second question about the energy with Pemex, I think the most relevant, let's say, progress that we have made is the key for that project is the availability of ethane. We have been in discussion with Pemex around this topic, with certain investment, Pemex, we believe Pemex can supply the ethane that we require for the plant. They are right now in the process of finalizing some engineering analysis of some studies to confirm this availability. And hopefully, whenever they are ready to do that, we will be able to move or to make a more, let's say, serious announcement of the project. In their availability study, this is assuming no impact from the energy reform. If energy reform is to move forward, then hopefully availability of ethane will be increased significantly. So that will be an additional plus for the project. But as of now, things are looking reasonably well. and we expect to have a definition from them so that we are in so we can sign a long-term contract for the supply of this basic raw material.
Thanks, Pepe. And is there any opportunity that you saw opening with the energy reform, anything additional that you didn't have on the radar that could happen with the energy reform and OPEC can participate in?
Well, certainly. I think there's a lot of potentially attractive projects that could develop. I mean, if more ethane becomes available, we could be talking of an even bigger plant of LNG. And the other very attractive possibility for us is the possibility of a propane dehydrogenation plant to produce propylene. And that would be another project that would be, let's say, enhanced by the energy reform. And we are looking also at some other possibilities. As an example, a potential backward integration to ammonia, which is one of the basic raw materials for caprolactam. There will be another possibility that will be certainly enhanced with the energy reform. And we are looking at even some opportunities in fertilizers as well. So of course if the energy reform is to move forward and the availability of raw materials for us will increase significantly and would put us in a position where we could certainly capitalize in a lot of other projects.
Thanks so much, Pepe.
Up next from HSBC, we'll go to Juan Carlos Mateo.
Hello. Good morning, Pepe, Eduardo, Hernan. Thank you for the coming. My question is very simple, and it's just looking at the results, it looks from a quarter on quarter, perhaps the more meaningful comparison than year to year. And the increase in EBITDA of approximately 29% is definitely outstanding. And the question is very simple. Would you consider this as a changing trend, or do you think we could expect the quarter-on-quarter comparisons to look similar as the strong one that we saw in this third quarter?
As we mentioned, and let me explain again. The margins. You might recall that the fourth quarter last year was the lowest point of margins in PET in Asia at the fourth quarter 12. And then what we have experienced this year, in January, February, the margins of PET to paraxylene and glycol increased to like $220 for January, February. From then on, margins went up to like $260 for the next 4 months, March to June. And then in July, August, we have a small decrease in margin from $260 to $240. And again, we were surprised, particularly by September and the middle of October margins were below the 200 level. We overestimate for next year is that the margins will go back to around the $235, $240, which we believe to be the cash cost of the producers in Asia. So, yes, if margins go back to this level, which is what we were expecting up until a month and a half ago, if margins go back to this level, and with all the cost improvements that we are going to have next year, we should start moving in a positive trend. And again, I tell you, as of last Thursday, the margins were 180. Today, are closer to 210, 220. So we believe that as this seasonality changes, and in particularly as the customers are less afraid of reduction in prices of raw materials, we believe the margins will probably go into this expected range again around the $235 per ton.
Thank you. Very clear.
We'll go next to Luis Miranda of Santander.
Yes, hi, good morning. A question in the polypropylene area. I don't know if you could give us some idea or color in terms of the dynamic of the domestic market. We saw some decline in volume, but I would like to understand if this is driven basically by demand or are you seeing some pressure from imported products also here? Thank you.
Yes, no, in polypropylene we have not seen any pressure from imported products. Again, it's pretty much a similar explanation to what we have in polyester. Polypropylene prices have been on the relatively high side, around 70 cents per pound, up until last month. The market was expecting a reduction in propylene prices for October, November, December, and this indeed materialized in October, so prices came down, and the people are still expecting another reduction of prices in November. So when that happens, the customers normally reduce their demand and try to reduce their inventories, so they buy less product. So that's what I think we're experiencing. We haven't seen any significant change in demand versus the previous quarter. And in fact, if you look at the data, we have increased significantly our sales volume versus last year as a result of having more availability of propylene. So no, we don't see pressure from imports. In polypropylene, and we don't see a change in the demand other than the inventory management from our customers, which should not, should be a one-to-one type of situation.
Perfect, thanks. And at what level are you using the cell capacity of the polypropylene plant?
We are operating or producing right now around 35,000 tons per month out of, let's say, 60,000 tons of capacity. We have a significant non-use capacity. And that's why I mentioned before the opportunity of energy reform, availability of propane, that we could have this propane dehydro plant, and we could operate this plant at full capacity. In Mexico, today, the demand of polypropylene is a little bit north of 1 million tons, and we are supplying 400,000. So there is a significant upside for our volume to supply the domestic market as soon as we have propylene.
Perfect. Thank you,
Jose. And once again, to the audience, it is star then one for questions. Again, please make sure your mute button is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. From Actinver Equity Research, we'll go to Federico Robinson.
Hi, good morning. I would like to understand the variables behind the net income, which present a 47% decline. Of course, it's because of the operating performance, but I would like to understand better the other variables. Thank you.
Okay, I will ask Hernan to explain that to you.
Definitely, Federico. Good morning. This is Hernan.
Good morning.
The main effect comes from the lower operating income. We also had an increase in comprehensive financing expense. We had the one-time charges in the debt prepayments that we carried out in the third quarter associated with the prepayment of debt in Grupo Petrotemex. And there was also an incremental tax effect compared to the same quarter last year, as last quarter we're seeing an increased deferred tax benefit from the merge of two Altec subsidiaries in September.
Perfect. Thank you.
But quarter on quarter, we have very similar.
The impact of these one-time charges in the prepayment of debt was significant, right?
Yes. $18 million worth of one-time prepayment charges.
So that's the number one variable, right?
Yes. Yes. The operating income and that $18 million one-time charge.
Perfect. Thank you.
So we we start next quarter, we will have a more representative level of interest expense.
The underlying comprehensive financing expense and taxes was quarter on quarter was pretty stable.
Anything further, Mr. Robinson?
No, that's it. Thank you.
We'll move next to Nikolai Littman of Morgan Stanley.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen, and thank you for the call and for taking my questions. A few questions, if I may. First, on volumes. I'm surprised to see this is the second quarter with quite weak volumes. Can you give the breakdown on how much of that is for the export market and how much of that is for the North American market? Or if you could just give a sense of how the North American market is performing, if you're losing market share, gaining market share, if you're seeing imports. So first, that's the first question, just color on the volumes. In terms of the second question, it's related to the guidance that you mentioned in the beginning, I think, that you were seeing TX prices coming down, and you would assume that the margins would go up on the basis of that. So when I look at your guidance for the fourth quarter, what's really baked in there when it comes? As far as I can see, it looks like the opposite, that margins come down even further a little bit in the fourth quarter. And then finally, a question on the ammonia idea that you had. As far as I know, those projects are very sizable. I know Pemex is looking at a couple of these projects and looking for partners. Could you give us a sense of what you meant by that, the size of these projects and the kind of investments that you're thinking about? Those are my three questions. Thanks.
Okay, well, going to the volume first. The volume, the reduction in the volume has been mostly in export market. In PET, we exported, this year we have exported less quantity than last year as a result, again, of the market conditions outside of North America. In the case of PTA, we have had a decrease in what we would call indirect exports. So our customers of PET, particularly customers in Mexico, have been exporting less than last year, less PET, and that means we have supplied or they have demanded less PTA from us. So again, this is not a change in market share. We continue to supply all of the requirements of our customers, of PTA customers in Mexico. And in the U.S., again, we don't perceive a change in market share. If anything, what we have seen is in the low segments of the market of PET in the U.S., we've seen a little bit more recycled products moving in and some white spec products also capturing share. But we don't see any major difference in share in our PET markets in the U.S. And in Mexico. It's mostly the weakness in the volumes is mostly export related. On the other hand, also as a result of the KPA shutdown, we are going to decrease some of our sales of polyester staple, and that is mostly a change in the use of polyester staple in carpets. The carpet market in the U.S. mostly is moving away from polyester staple and nylon staple into polyester BCF and nylon BCF. So that also has reduced our sales of polyester staple this year. And again, since the KPA plant is shut down, KPA was supplying a significant portion of this market, of the carpet market in the U.S. So that is also another explanation of the reduction in volume.
Can you give us a sense of North American volumes? If they're up and down, plus minus, I assume they're down.
In the U.S., let me talk about PET, which is probably the largest and most important market. In the U.S., the PET volume, let's say domestic consumption of PET, has been increasing in the 1 to 2% range this year. Okay. As I mentioned, however, some of this growth has been taken by recycled products, an increase in recycled products. And so the let's say, supply of virgin PET has been
pretty flat. So very similar to last year.
So you have lost, that was, you have shown two quarters now with minus 7, 8% volumes. So either your export
has
just disappeared, or you have lost share.
No, as I mentioned, most of the lost volume has been in the export volume, and some of the volume has been staple fiber for the reasons I mentioned. We have we believe our market share is very similar to what it was last year.
Okay, thanks. And on the guidance, what's baked in?
In the guidance, I know this is going to result. Difficult to understand, seems contradictory, but Nikolai, what I mean, for us, believe it or not, normally when prices increase of raw material, when prices of raw material increase, our EBITDA increases. When prices of raw material decrease, our EBITDA decreases. Why is that? Because remember, we have a cost plus formula which immediately passes to the customer the saving or the increase of the cost of the raw material. But the problem is that when prices of raw materials are coming down, what we normally experience is a reduction in demand from our customers because they want to reduce their inventory, so they buy less. Whenever they see a price coming down, they buy less, so volume goes down. And on top of that, the other important consideration is whatever we have in inventory, when the price of raw material goes down, we lost value on that inventory, and that also impacts our EBITDA. Okay, so that happens when the prices are going down. When the prices are going up, it's normally quite the opposite. The customers see that and then try to buy ahead of time, and also whatever we have in the inventory, the value goes up. Again, this is pretty abnormal. I mean, it's not normal in the industry because we have this cost clause that immediately kicks in. When you have a normal situation, when prices of raw materials come down, you can still, you know, get the higher price of your product for a while, and whenever you reduce it, you have already compensated for the loss of inventory. But in this case, this is an immediate reaction. That's what happened for us. Prices going up help us, and prices of raw materials going down normally help us short term in both cases. Okay, so that's probably, I don't know if that's the explanation that you wanted to hear, but that's what happened in most of our products actually. If it does happen in PET and PTA, and it does happen also in polypropylene. Okay, which is, because again, as we have explained, in these problems we have a lot of cost-plus type of formulas. Okay, so that's on the on the results for the fourth quarter. That's why the results of the fourth quarter are lower. And on top of the margins being lower in Asia for this fourth quarter, and again, as I mentioned, we hope this will recover hopefully very soon. In terms of ammonia, what we are looking at, you're right, a scale plant for ammonia will be probably 750,000 tons or something like that, and that is a huge investment. It might be close to, I don't know, $900 million, $1 billion. Our consumption of ammonia is 130,000 tons per year. So what we are looking at is an opportunity of a sort of a capacity reservation where we would buy only the capacity that we require, which means 130,000 tons of capacity. That might be an investment, $150-170 million, approximately. And with prices today, that could be EBITDA close to $50 million. I don't know again if that's the type of guidance you were looking for, but that's about what we're talking about. Let's say $150 to $200 million investment, and let's say EBITDA around $50 million per year.
Okay, thanks. Do you know the total size of Pemex ammonia capacity, including what I understand a lot of capacity has been shut down?
Yes.
And would that be some sort of significant down the road?
I think the total size of PEMEX would be 1.8 million tons per year. But they are producing probably half of that.
Yes. Okay. And that, would that be a new line of business, do you think, potentially down the road? It benefits from the gas. It has a lot of the similarities that you've been looking for strategically.
Yes. I mean, we could consider it. I mean, the first objective for us is the integration to ammonia. But, yes, it could be an opportunity to explore a new business, particularly not the ammonia itself, but let's say perhaps ammonia integrated to fertilizer. Okay, it will be more like an ammonia urea plant or something like that. We are looking at that, but at this stage, I would not say that we're planning anything. For us, again, priority is to integrate our caprolactam plant.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And as a final reminder to our audience today, it is star then one if you have a question. We'll go next to Ivan Enriquez of HSBC.
Hello, Pepe, Eduardo, and Hernan. Thank you for the call. I have two questions. First, I understand that your caprolactam business enjoyed very good times a couple of years ago. However, things seem to be structurally different these days. Could you please share with us how much EBITDA has caprolactam generated during 2013? How does this figure compare to the EBITDA in 2012?
Well, I guess Eduardo sort of explained to you that most of our, most of the change versus our guidance is due to the caprolactam plant or caprolactam business. This year, our EBITDA is running very close to zero. Last year was 40. 2 years ago, it was $80 million. So, yes, it has been a significant change. And as we mentioned during the call, we are taking a lot of different steps to bring that plant back to profitability. The improvement in the efficiency of the plant, this agreement we have with DSM, we are looking at two other deals like that. We are doing some projects to enhance our fertilizer business to produce higher value added in the fertilizer business. We have two projects on that as well that will increase significantly the profitability. And I would say those are the most important initiatives, short-term, improving inefficiency, reduction of cost of caprolactam, and increasing value added of the fertilizers. And medium, long-term, as you well know, there are two major initiatives. One is the cogeneration plant. The cogeneration plant in Univex, so that you have an idea, would probably increase the EBITDA of the plant in $70 million per year. So it's a major project that will significantly improve profitability of Unimex. And the other project that I already explained is the ammonia plant. So, again, if we do all of these things together, you're talking of, let's say, 70 from the cogeneration, probably 50 from ammonia, and let's say another 15 for the fertilizer side and the $9 million in savings. So it's quite a sizable improvement in EBITDA with all the projects that we have, that we are pursuing.
So, okay, thanks, Pepe. So it seems you are committed to growing this business and enhancing costs in this business going forward, but have you considered any strategic alternative for this business? I mean, I understand that European players are talking about a consolidation stage for this industry, so I'm not sure. I mean, it's an
important business. We look at opportunities, consolidation. However, we see a lot of volatility in the margins of caprolactam going forward. A lot of new capacity coming in China. So again, we are very, let's say, careful about some of these strategic opportunities. And if anything, also, we're also pursuing a project
to expand a nylon polymer plant in Mexico to supply in North America and to reduce our dependence to China. That would be another initiative that we're pursuing. It's a relatively minor investment. We're thinking $25 million, an EBITDA $5, $6 million. But the most important part, of course, is the let's say, certainty of selling caprolactam or using the caprolactam captively. So we're looking at that initiative as well. And we've been looking at opportunities of consolidation of the business globally. But, again, as I said, there's a lot of new capacity coming in China, and I believe we want to wait for that to happen before making a move.
Okay, so would you think divesting this business could be a remote possibility, or we are really far from that?
Exit? Well, I think I mentioned, you know, when you look at the caprolactam plants in the world, we are the second lowest cost plant. And the one plant that has a lower cost than we have is the plant that is integrated to ammonia, and they include the ammonia advantage into that. So if you were to separate the ammonia integration, I think it would be probably the most competitive plant. I think, again, what we have to do is look for these opportunities to integrate, to take advantage of cogeneration, to improve our position in fertilizer. Unless somebody else comes and makes an offer to us that is worth more than what we believe is you know, that what we believe is worth to Alpek. But under the existing market conditions, we see that relatively, you know, unlikely to happen.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you, Pepe. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And again, it is star then one to the phone audience. We'll pause for just a moment. And it appears we have no further questions at this time. Mr. Lozano, I would like to turn the conference back over to you.
Thank you. Well, we very much appreciate everyone's participation in today's call, and we look forward to maintaining an open dialogue with all market participants. Please feel free to contact us if you have any additional comments or questions, and thank you very much for joining our call. Have a very nice day.
Thank you. And again, that does conclude today's conference. We thank you all for joining us.